Hey everyone, Happy New Year. Welcome to the Broke Girl Society podcast, season four. I'm Christina, your host. Thanks so much for listening in. Yeah, so today we are doing step nine. It's a big one, I know. This is the one where all the step work we've done up to this point has led us here. Our friend Tara is back with us. She hosts the Ambitious Addicts podcast, and she has a ton of step work on her podcast too. So if you aren't listening to her, you should definitely check it out. Like, she's amazing. Step nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And one of the questions that I get asked a lot is, well, what if you can't make amends? For whatever reason. And I know that there's a lot of reasons why we wouldn't be able to make a direct amends. Maybe the person we harmed is no longer with us. Maybe to do so would cause us to be in contact with somebody who is harmful, or, you know, legal problems. Whatever the issue is that you can't make a direct amends, my best answer to this question, and I am by no means an expert, So this is just what has worked for me, is I just choose to do a living amends. And we talk more about that in this episode, but living amends is just choosing to stay on the right path, choosing to stay in recovery, choosing to fix those internal issues, those things that maybe those behaviors that, you know, took us down this path of gambling harm, that caused harm. And so by doing a living amends, it just, to me, it's like I'm staying focused on recovery. I'm staying focused on, you know, the work that I do in the BGS, helping others find a way through addiction and to just stay on track and not go down a road of gambling harm again. And so that's my best answer to that. And I hope that helps if this is a question that you're struggling with, or way of how to move through step nine. So, all right, we'll do a short note about our sponsors and then roll on into our episode. Thanks for listening. The Broke Girl Society podcast is sponsored by the Better Institute, where people go to get better. For more information about their services and where they're located, visit betterinstitute.com. And we're also sponsored by Burgess Health, an online therapy platform for gambling addiction recovery. For more information on their services, visit burgesshealth.com. And we are back with Tara from Ambitious Addicts to talk about step nine. Look at us. Like, we went a year and a half without getting step work out, and now we're putting out step eight and nine, hopefully within a month of each other. I'm saying this so that, you know, I'm committed.
Give yourself
to it now.
Room for editing time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. I'm glad to be doing this again. I know people find it really valuable to hear people speak about the steps and have a little bit of, you know, informality and exposure to lived experience. And so I really enjoy doing these, and, you know, our amends, I guess, to the people who do look forward to them is to get back in our rhythm of putting them out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. So step nine, make direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when we do. Wait, did I write this down right?
Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others.
Yeah. I know the step. I don't know why. I was just like trying to read it and it didn't read right off my paper. So then it was like, wait.
That's all right. I got it. Sometimes I jumble words, put them in different orders when I'm trying to read out loud.
So this one, okay, we just talked about step eight and kind of like preparing ourselves.
Yeah.
For this step.
We're only working on the ones that ended in our yes column. We're not doing the hell no's. We're not doing the maybes.
Yeah. At this point, let's just work on the yeses. And again, I just want to iterate. Is it reiterate?
Reiterate.
I wanted to do this like as with as few edits as possible, but here I am just like messing it up right out the gate. But maybe I'll leave it in. I don't know.
Leave it in. You're human.
So we're going to reiterate that there is no time limit to work the steps. Like, there's no, like, we talked in step eight about the yes maybe, and hell no columns of amends, right? So we're tackling the yes now, and we can take our time and navigate this yes pile. It doesn't have to be like, okay, let's see, check, 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 on to the next. Like, you can do that if you have a really small amends list. And I've worked with people who have had a really small amends list, and I've worked with people who have a really big amends list. And it's just important to know that there is no time limit. I mean, progressively keep working towards your goals of amends. Keep working a living amends by working your recovery. But, you know, if you're like, I'm going to do step 9 next week, step 10 the week after, step 11, you know, like, it doesn't necessarily work like that. Right.
Yeah. Everybody's journey is different. You know, there's part of me that sometimes envies the individuals that were like able to progress through the steps without any stuckness. You know, like I got pretty darn stuck a few times.
Me too.
This would be one of them. And at the same time, be gracious. See, here I am screwing up words too. Be gracious with ourselves to know, like, this is our path. Right. And don't compare your recovery to another person's, because we all deal with things in a different way. And that person who is able to get through steps quickly, or maybe they're in an institutional setting where that's required, you know, you're there for a finite amount of time and the institution follows a 12-step program. And so they're pulling you through them. And you may need to come back and, you know, go deeper at a later date. This one, I totally agree, Christina. It's like you can loop back to it. There's no timeline. You know, if you end up with 20 on your yes list, this is where your relationship with your higher power, at least for me, really, really comes into play in like understanding, I'm willing, right? Am I ready? And you might need to do some popping back to earlier steps in order to be prepared to make specific amends. Like if you're working on a specific character trait and not only being ready to have that character trait removed, but also you're pretty sure it's gone, right? You can look at the amends you're about to make, and was that character trait part of what contributed to the harm? And if it was, you might want to really, really, you know, tune into, am I where I want to be with that character trait? Like, let's take lying. Lying seems to be the easiest one for people to relate to, because so many of us lie to protect our addiction. Yeah, like, am I really done lying, or am I still telling little white lies? And is it possible that that might show up here in the amends making, right? Or am I excuse making, or am I blame shifting, right? Do I still need work on the character trait that was part of this original harm? Because if I do, then maybe I'm not quite making ready to actually sit down and make that direct amends.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of really understanding too, where the amends is coming from. Is there pressure to make the amends? Is there fear behind the amends? Like, fear you're going to lose this person if you don't fix this right now, you know, kind of really understanding where the desire to make the amends comes from. I know we touched on this in step 8, you know, as we're getting prepared to make these amends, is really kind of understanding where the feelings come from. And, you know, that's that just 8 and 9 just go hand in hand. You know, we're talking about being prepared, and then we're talking about actually doing it. So when it comes time to actually start working on these amends, it's like making sure that we have all these things in place so that we're coming from the most authentic place we possibly can. Because that's, to me, where the energy gets released.
Yeah.
To really be coming from that place of healing, that place of growth. And just knowing, you know, that way it's not one of those things where it's like, I'm sorry. And then you have the behavior still there. Because, you know, this was a pattern in my own when I was in active addiction.
I'm giggling. Oh, I'm sorry. Then go do the same damn thing.
Right. Because then that's the point where it's like, I read a quote that really changed my life when I entered recovery. And it was like, you know me, I'm all about the quotes. But it was like, saying sorry and not changing your behavior is just manipulation. And it was like really recognizing that, you know, I really had to own that manipulation and that gaslighting behavior. And that's like, and it hurt me more to say, well, I was a manipulator. I was a gaslighter, because it's like, to me, like it hurts so bad to recognize myself as that person. But it was so important to own it, to own it and say, look, I did these things. I made other people think they were crazy so that I could continue on my destructive behavior. And, you know, that's a lot of when I talk about the amends that I personally made with the people I put in my yes column. It was acknowledging that, yes, I mean, there were specific times. Did I list every single incident? No, because it was really overall about just my behavior. And so when I was talking, like, to, for instance, and I'm not going to go into like detail because it's my own personal story, but when I was talking to my sister, for instance, and just talking about, I will share this because I have shared this in the podcast, but she had co-signed for me on a car, and I had let the car go back for repossession. But before it did that, I had so many opportunities to come clean to my sister, where she could have stepped in and probably, matter of fact, I think she did loan me money to catch it up, not knowing, like, she was getting calls, she was getting letters, and I was just lying about it. And I'm not proud to talk about this, and it still brings up, you know, a lot of hurt. But I was lying about it, like, oh no, I paid it. Like, it
checks in the mail.
Yeah. And it was just like, oh, well, it's a mistake on their end. And then I remember specifically, like, she loaned me the money and I gambled it, thinking I could double the money, and like all these things that my brain was telling me. Finally, she stopped listening to me.
Yeah.
She called the bank directly, talked to the finance person. They let her know the situation. And then she called me and she's like, just stop. And then she was like, this is what's going to happen. She's like, I'm going to let them take it back. And, or no, they had already taken it. Sorry. They had already taken it at this point. She's like, I'm not going to bail you out of this.
I'm not bailing you out.
And she was like, even taking on the harm that it was going to do to her financial credit.
Yeah.
She was like, I'm not going to fix this. And even then, it was like, that was 2018. And it was like when my gambling was just at its worst, like that was the worst for me. And even then, or it was too, like right at the end of 2018. And you would have thought that that would have changed my behavior, or would have, you know, changed the direction. And it didn't. I mean, I still continue to gamble through 19, 20, and the early part of 21 before I entered recovery. And so, like, during that, our relationship was so strained, but that's the part where it kind of hurt my brother-in-law, because my sister was so hurt. And, you know, it just hurt everybody, because they just like, what is going on with her? Like, this isn't normally like her. Like, my sister and I have co-signed up for each other's cars for a long time, because it, for one thing or another, we were just in positions that we could help the other one. And so this isn't like something she was used to, you know what I mean? She was always used to us like taking care of each other. And here it is, like, I'm just hurting her repeatedly. And, you know, making amends to her, it wasn't so much like I couldn't fix the financial impact at the time, right? Like, I couldn't fix what it did to her credit score. I couldn't fix what it did to her, the lying, the manipulation, the gaslighting. I couldn't fix any of that, go back and change any of that. The only thing that was going to work for her, the only amends that I could make to her, is to get better and to work on myself so that I don't continue to hurt her and my mom, my other sisters, my family. And, you know, that was more important to her. And here it is 2.5 years later, and our relationship is amazing. Like, she trusts me again. And, you know, I had to move. And when I went through my separation and divorce, I had to move. And I was going to need a co-signer because I hadn't ever rented an apartment before. And my mom didn't hesitate.
to co-sign for me.
Right.
And like, even I recently was car shopping and interest rates are a little bit higher. And even though I've done a lot of work, like I was looking at maybe a little bit higher interest rate. I mean, because interest rates are already high.
They're a lot higher right now.
And so like, it was going to be a little bit more. And my mom was like, do you want me to co-sign? Even my sister was like, I'll help you, because that's the living amends that I've made to them. Like, I'm still working on the financial amends to them. Like, it's a slow process, but you know, for the money I borrowed and things like that, that's an ongoing process, but I'm committing to that and taking care of that. And then I'm also taking care of myself, you know, working my recovery. Like, I wouldn't say I'm the same person I was before addiction took me, because I still had habits and character defects, you know, prior to that. But the version of me they're getting is probably the most authentic I've been in I don't know how long. And that to me, like, not only does that make amends to them by staying in recovery and by doing the work that I do, but it makes amends to myself, you know, for just doing that to myself, doing that to the relationships, and living with that. So
yeah,
that's how I connect with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a powerful step for healing,
and even to be able to talk about it in a capacity like this, where other people are going to be listening, they're going to hear this. Because one of my biggest fears when I started this podcast was, are the bad stuff all people are ever going to know about me? You know, that I hurt my sister in this way, that I caused this kind of harm, you know, are people going to compare and be like, oh, I can't believe she did that. But at the end of the
go ahead.
I was going to say, at the end of the day, it's like me being honest and open, you know, about the harm and the healing is just, it's more important for me to share it than to hold it. I mean, there's some things I won't talk about, that, you know, there's things that I won't talk about, but on here, but that's something that I feel like is so powerful and so important to me, that I was able to repair that relationship. And I live my amends by just, you know, staying committed to my recovery.
Yeah. Not only repair that relationship, but also to be able to trust the support you have from your family to pursue this that you felt was an important part of your own recovery and other people's, and like to contribute to the recovery of others, that you have that support, that you can be as honest as you're being right now. Like, we know, as people who publicly talk about our addiction, we know that it's not even that we have to, but that we want to be sensitive to what we expose others to. Right. And so there's things, of course, we're never going to talk about publicly, because it could create harm to somebody else if they haven't already expressed to us that we've got their support and consent/permission to discuss either anything. You know, some people are like, whatever, talk about anything, I don't care. But I have some boundaries within my own family that is like, please don't ever publicly talk about that. I know you talk publicly about stuff, like, don't talk about this thing. Right. And that's okay. That's me then, you know, honoring another person's request, and on the heels of talking about harm we've caused to others, right? That we don't want to be creating new harm, which requires us to be more intentional about that consideration of others, but in partnership with them, right? Not like, I'm going to do it my way. Like, choosing to talk publicly about your experience in addiction and recovery is a big deal, but us being able to come on and have this discussion, and for you to be honest about the relationship, both damage and repair, is so important for people to see that's possible.
Yeah.
And you know, I hinted at it when we were talking about step eight, like, we owe amends to ourselves. And I think for me, that's the one that's easiest to publicly talk about, because I had a lot of self-hatred, self-loathing, language going on. Right. And I was not fully honoring who I was and what I wanted and all of that, right? And so I talk probably the most publicly about that when it comes to amends, is the amends to self or the amends to institution, or real high level about amends to others, because I haven't necessarily had a consent conversation with some people, right? So it's it's important that we be an example of healing being possible while also being able to be as honest with this audience that you have, that I have, whatever, anyone who might tune in, about that experience. I don't know what I'm trying to say, that experience for us being so, I think, comparison based, like we're comparing ourselves to the rest of the world when we enter recovery, like I'm not as bad as that person, or if that person did that, you know, and they found healing, then that's possible for me too, right? So you and I can both say we had thoughts of suicide. We repaired our relationship so much with ourselves that we want to be an example of what it means to choose to live and then go on to live the life we wish we were living before, because we were in addiction living this life we hated so much that we thought about leaving it. And I don't, I think I'm stumbling over my words right now, because there's so few things that I'm willing to talk about the amends I had to make in a really direct way of like the who it was and what happened. And I so appreciate you telling your stories, in that you have this support from your family to do that. A lot of my amends were very focused just on my real small circle in terms of direct amends and apology and the sit down. And the easiest ones for me to talk about are the people that I asked for money, you know, and how I made amends to them for like even putting them in a position to have to decide whether or not they would be willing to give me money when I earned more than them, or, you know, there was no reason that I should have had to ask for money other than the fact that I was being irresponsible and I was gambling. And then it's easy to talk about the amends with my son, but there's some stuff that, you know, I got to be conscious of his age and his friend's influence. And anyhow, yeah, woo, I got super sidetracked just in
no, that. I think that was a good point of like why we do share so much and why we don't share everything. I mean, there's just going to be some stuff that, again, I didn't really think of it in the like terms of like, don't really have their permission to talk about it, but it's in just terms of like, I'm just not like at a point where I want people to know everything about like there's still, and you hear that a lot. It's like, I just don't think anybody needs to know. And it's like, you know, nobody has the right to our story to me, except for the people that we've harmed. And, you know, what we choose to share is, it just shows a lot about where we're at in our growth and our healing. And so there's still parts of it that's just like, I haven't really quite processed or really understood, or, you know, I'm not yet in a good place with those people. And or I may never be. And it's just like one of those things where, just still working through it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's big work to work it through
is. This. It so, is. And I think you can tell how hard like step 9 is just through this conversation alone. Cause we're just like, it's a lot of emotion, but I know that even how I've worked step 9 and how like even just having this conversation with you, it's just something that I'm just going to keep going back to and keep working on and keep shifting. Like I still have maybe a few things in my yes pile, and I still, you know, the maybes are kind of starting to shift over. And what's interesting is the more that I have the conversation about the harm, and the easier it gets to continue having the conversation, then the easier it gets to bring something else into the conversation. And I just remember early on, and I always refer back to the podcast I did with you, because I was only 60 days in recovery. And I always
the one right after we met.
Yes. The very first one, like how our friendship and dynamic and everything started. And I still listen to that one. And I just go back because it's a good tool for me to reflect on where I was. Because I was still really early on. I had that pink cloud surrounding me and I was, yeah, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And I'm not sleeping much because I'm so fired up.
And, now and institutional like, angst, if I remember.
Yes. And it's so interesting because now when people, I don't even know if we're on the subject of nine anymore, but now when people post about how angry they are and the conspiracy theories and all this, it's just like, oh, I can just really tell where a person is at in their own recovery just by that, because it's like, that's where they're, and I'm not speaking for everybody. And if you're listening and you're in that place, like, don't take offense.
We all had that. Well, and so many of us had that part of it. It was part of the journey. Yes.
But it's just, that's where like a lot of the deflecting of blame happens. It's like, well, it's not okay. It makes me feel better to know that these machines are meant to do this. So it's not like I personally didn't, you know, like it's not a personal thing, or like, even if
it's not my fault,
it's not my fault. Or like, if they find out that a medication they're on is causing compulsion and things like that. And it's just like, oh, well, it's the medicine. So it's not entirely my fault. And it's like, no, like I get it. The medicine probably lit up that pathway or made access to that a little bit easier, but there's still all the eternal issues that made it possible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's just like, so it's just finding like
and the harm,
and the harm
that was created as you continued, right? Like,
yeah,
I think, yes, there's absolutely 100% validity and, you know, designed to be addicted.
Medication, wired for addiction, like all these different facets.
And I remember some of our earliest conversations of having with you around that and around like the importance, and this comes from literature in one of the 12-step programs about like, does the why really matter? Like, this is where we are. If we spend all this time trying to focus on why we're there, we lose focus on where we're trying to go. And we're trying to go to a better life, and we're trying to go to healed relationships. And if we spend all this time on why am I this way, which is a super normal and human thing to do, so I'm not saying don't do it, but if you recognize that that's where so much of your focus is, it is going to distract you from the activities that could lead you closer to or keep you on your path of recovery. And this amends making, the actual going out and making of amends, you know, can, as you progress in the steps, it actually can be making amends to casinos you wrote bad checks to, like,
which I still have a hard time wrapping my head around that.
I did that.
Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
I mean, even this far, it's like, and that wasn't really a thing for me. Like I wasn't somebody that wrote checks at the casino, but I think I would have a hard time. Like, I think that's some work I need to do, because when you say that, or when you say, you know, I think early on when we were doing our financial inventory and we were talking about that process, and you were like, well, bank or financial institutions. And I'm like, no, and I'm saying this verbally because they charged me so much money. If they paid a check, they charged me. Because I was in my overdraft balance, they paid a check, they charged me. If they didn't pay a check, they charged me. If I used an ATM, they charged me. And I'm like, no, I feel like they got their amends by me tenfold. Like that's where you and I probably have a different, and that's okay. That's okay. But for me,
you can decide. I paid that debt. That's my living amends.
And I think that's what I ended up doing.
Yeah.
In our conversation
it can be good enough. Yeah.
I feel like we're square when it comes to the bank. I feel like they came out on top. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like they probably came out better by my own harm than had I done. But I get where you're kind of recognizing, like, hey, this wasn't necessarily right either.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't right to assume that they would take care of my debt. It wasn't right to like use money that was already set aside for something else to do this. And so, yeah, I think that's where the recognition is when it comes to, like, it wasn't necessarily their responsibility to cover my mistakes. Right. That was an option that they gave me, which enabled me, might I say, for a long time. But it's also, you know, kind of getting back to, they did all right in the end.
Yeah, I'm certainly, yeah, the way we make amends. And I think that's kind of the next thing that we can talk about is the how do you make an amends, right? In the workbook, it definitely gives some good, you know, reflective stuff, like just really looking again at your motive for the amends before you go towards that step of actually making it. And then if you've got a questionable motive, you know, check in yourself before you try to do that. And then when you, it gives some good guidance about how to clean that up. If you've got a motive that you're looking at it and going, oh, that doesn't, you know, I'm not proud of the way that motive shows up. How do I fix that? But the action of the amends making, if you're cool with it, I'm just going to walk through some specific examples of the types of amends that you can make to someone.
Yeah. And again, for those listening, we are using A Woman's Way Through the 12 Steps workbook. You can find it on Amazon. Who's the author?
The author of this
Stephanie
book. Yeah, is Stephanie I don't know if it's Covington or Covington.
Okay.
Covington. I want to say that with an English accent for some reason. Okay.
Bringing some sophistication to this episode.
Yeah. Hello. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the Broke Girl Society podcast. That is like not it. An English accent. That's like a movie phone voice. Remember movie phone?
I do not.
Oh, we used to have this line that we could call to find out like the times that a movie was playing in a theater.
Yeah.
And the dude would be like, hello and welcome to movie phone.
Okay. Thank you for that little bit of nostalgia.
Okay. All right. On to the very serious topic. So the action of making amends, what do you need to do to create the best possible relationship with each person on your list? Remember to think of your part in the relationship and not to take responsibility for the other person's part. So they give examples of direct amends, living amends, and symbolic amends. And this is where you get to decide what feels safe to you. And I'm saying that because this step is actually got a caveat to it, right? We're making direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So it's important to reflect on, could injury be caused by the amends itself to them or others? And you are an other. And that's so important for me to say, because I owe amends to people who I had abusive relationships with. I did things that caused them harm, but they're not safe people for me. And so I can't. Today, don't think I can't. You know, can't is a really strong word. And as you said before, we never say never in recovery. So maybe someday I won't think that that's a potential for harm. But in some cases, I think there's potential for harm for me. Another example would be, you know, there's an ex-boyfriend that I'd like to make direct amends to. However, they're in a relationship, they're married, they have children. Our relationship was a really, really long time ago. And I frankly just don't know if it might create harm to their marriage for me to enter the picture. And so I'm choosing not to make the direct amends because I do not know. And it would be risky to even try to find out, right? I mean, I know that there are marriages where if a strange woman is calling, that might be harmful to the marriage. And I don't want to create harm just by making a phone call.
Yeah. And so it's really just kind of assessing those situations. I have a few similar situations that the abuse really showed up for me in my addiction. It was a main cause, like not a main cause, but a trigger. It was a main trigger. And that's just not something I can do. The harm would be
to me.
And it's just one of those things, but I don't really struggle with that either. I don't really struggle with, you know, that's in my hell no category. And it's one of those things where I think the amends is to just stay away from that situation and not put myself in that harm again. And that just, yeah, it's one of those things. But I know we've talked about making amends and making sure that it's for the right reasons as well. And I remember I had a friendship that I lost because of my gambling behavior. And I'm not going to go into that because it's one of those things where I don't really have the permission of the other party involved. But I remember she reached out to like have dinner to try and talk about it. And I was reflecting on this the other day. And I was trying to think, you know, or maybe I reached out. I honestly can't remember who reached out, but it was one of those things where we had some things coming up that we were probably going to be in the same space for. And it was like, it's better if we just kind of like talk it out a little bit. And so when I look at my amends on that, it's like, I only showed up, I wasn't ready to make full amends. I wasn't ready to be completely accountable for my actions. And I wasn't ready to fully accept that person back into my life because of the, you know, there was harm on both ends.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking about that situation, and I'm like, I wasn't ready to make amends, but I felt pressure to make amends. And then I look at kind of how the relationship unfolded after that initial sit down conversation. And it was like, it never came back together because the intention wasn't correct. The intention wasn't, I really want to clear this up. I really want to let them know how sorry I am. I really want to set some boundaries going forward. The intention was just to kind of make things more comfortable for some future events.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't like, it just wasn't from the right perspective and the right intention. And so then it's like, it never really went back to, you know, like we never really got back on track. And even now to this point, I'm still real hesitant to step back in there because I'm not sure what my intention is with that. And so it's one that's still kind of in the maybe, still figuring it out kind of thing.
Yeah. And that's the importance on 8 of like working on the willingness, and that you can be willing and then make a determination in this step that it would create harm. And so you're going to find another way. So that's where these other options besides a direct amends come into play. So direct amends, there's 3 examples here. Apologize and ask for forgiveness without making any jabs about the other person's behavior. Pay someone back, right? Direct amends to self. Get enough rest each night. It's almost like, how do you know I was pulling all-nighters?
Yeah.
So those are 4 examples of direct amends. Living amends could be saying nothing, but starting to shift your behavior. Like you were saying earlier, that maybe we don't need to have that direct amends because bringing up the past may create harm. And so we're just going to, you know, release, pray, do whatever we might need to do within ourselves and really focus on not letting that character trait that led to the original harm carry forward. Another living amends, and we were already talking about this, is being honest about your feelings in the moment, right? Being honest about what you're feeling. Because a lot of what we're doing when we're in addiction is we're hiding our feelings. We're running away from our feelings. We're gaslighting, all the things we've already discussed. Another example of a living amends is committing to spending a specific amount of time with maybe someone you were neglecting. And that would be an example of an amends. In this one, they're talking specifically about a daughter, but focused on an activity that they enjoy. So sometimes in addiction, and this is interesting because there's some crossover between gaming and gambling. Sometimes with my son, I might, if I wasn't able to gamble, if I wasn't able to leave to go gamble, I might, you know, sit and binge some video games with him and like, come play video games. And that might've created harm for him with his own, you know, desire to play video games. So anyway, so I was choosing to do activities with him that were centered around what I liked. Not that he didn't like them too, but maybe that's where it, you know, maybe that's what started the like, was me saying, let's do this thing. And then there's also the symbolic amends, which is making a donate, like this one in particular says making a donation to the college where I cheated on tests. So, oh,
interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, making a donation, could be a symbolic amends, and that can come in a number of different ways. And one that I can think of is, you know, my addiction was escalating in my mom's illness and her cancer illness. So I can make a donation, and I sometimes really struggle, right? She's not alive anymore. How do I make amends to her for harm that I created while I was in my addiction while she was alive? And that could be a good one, you know?
Yeah. Focusing on something like when it's a position, like you can't make amends because they're not here anymore. It's one of those things. And I hear this a lot, especially with people who have parents that have passed. It's like, well, they're not here. I can't directly tell them I'm sorry. I can't directly do this. And that's a good point, is to think about something that connects you to them. Think about something that maybe was important to them, and either do a donation or maybe like volunteer, or you know, pick up their favorite hobby and maybe try and do that so that you can feel connected to them. If it's money that you owed them that they passed, maybe set yourself up a savings account and pay that money back as part of your debt repayment plan, and then utilize that money for something that you think your parents would have wanted that for you, or the person that's no longer here would have wanted for you. So there's a lot of ways that you can get creative about how to make amends. But at the end of the day, I think all the work that we're doing in these steps, and especially step 9, is just healing the hurt, not making excuses, taking accountability. And, you know, that's the biggest overall thing from step 9 is taking accountability. You know, step 8 is willingness to do it, preparing ourselves. Step 9 is actually doing it, taking accountability and saying, yes, this is something, because that is one of the things that you'll find the most healing is when you take accountability, you accept your actions, and you really work to overcome and change them. But you have to come from this really authentic place. And that's what people connect with. That's what people feel. And that's what changes, you know, how you move forward.
Yeah, it is. It is. This work, as hard as we've talked about it being, it's so transformational in yourself, transformational in relationships, transformational in your relationship with the broader world, your community, because you're really being intentional about what's the next right thing, which, as much as we say that in recovery, do the next right thing. Like, it's so, if we just stay on today and we think about one day at a time and what's the next right thing, like if that's a daily prompt for us, it changes everything.
Yeah. And navigating it in a way that doesn't bring up the harm, that doesn't like keep us living in the past, keep us living in that harm.
Yeah.
But also recognizing it, yeah, because that's how we don't continue the pattern. And that's sometimes it's really hard to balance that of it, like feeling like it, recognizing it, you know, accepting it, doing all this, but also not letting it keep us down and keep us in this thing, because at the end of the day, we're trying to build a life that we don't want to escape from. And if we're staying in that pain and we're staying in the past, you know, that's not building, that's squatting.
Yeah.
Squatting where we don't belong.
Yeah. And we don't want to stew in it. I mean, if you think about our emotions that I really am working real hard not to say negative and positive emotions. Right. But I'll illustrate for a second. Like, there's emotions that have a high frequency that vibrate at a high level, that have us being the best version of ourselves possible. And then there's emotions that are like quicksand, where if we stand in them for a really, really long time, then they pull us down and down and down and away from that highest version of ourselves as possible and away from the path we intend. We're stuck then in that emotion. And the best thing that we can do when we are stuck, at least from my personal experience, is name it, claim it, recognize this is what this is. This is guilt. I don't have to stay here. This is shame. I don't have to stay here. Like, it is a choice to seek to get out of the quicksand. And I don't know if you've ever like watched, you know, the old school, like Gilligan's Island. I don't know what episode it is that's popping in my head, but like, there's always somebody there with a stick helping you get out of the quicksand. Like, this is what Christina was talking about before, of like, you're not alone in this. And so if you're noticing yourself sinking in some of these kinds of emotions, it's absolutely when you need to call someone in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's where, you know, you're creating harm to yourself. And this step is intended to be a freeing step and help you, you know, process the emotion, recognize the emotion, move through it. But sometimes they can suck us in. So having that self-care plan and being ready, ready to ask for support, is important too. So I appreciate you naming that, Christina.
Yeah. I think that that's something that, you know, I struggle with sometimes is I get kind of stuck in. For me, it's a lot of it is emotional overwhelm.
Yeah. I'm feeling too much.
It's a theme for me. Like, I kind of connect with like being empathic a little bit, and I feel other people's emotions, and that is actually a trauma response. Look at me and all my like fancy words, but you know, it's a trauma response from just like childhood shit, where it's like you just become hypersensitive of other people's emotions. And this is something that I have struggled with in my own relationships, as being hypersensitive of other people's emotions, the feelings of walking on eggshell, and you know, doing all these things. And so like emotional overwhelm shows up a lot for me, and it feels a lot like being stuck in quicksand. And then you add like not only how people are around me emotionally, but then I add my own emotions. Like if I'm stuck in a moment of shame or guilt, you know, because like I said, sometimes even 2.5 years in, a memory or something will flash up, something that triggers it, you know, and then I've got the heaviness of that. And then I've got just the heaviness of all this. And it's like, yeah, it can be a very quicksand trappy thing. But what I've learned is I just reach out. And even if it's just a text message, you know, like, look, I'm really struggling with this, or like, I just need to vent about this for a minute. And I always feel so much better if I just kind of step outside of it for a second, mm-hmm. and pull myself out and recognize that I need to feel this, I need to understand this, but I'm not going to build a house in it, you know?
Yeah. And prayer and meditation are, of course, really great tools if we're recognizing that we're kind of emotionally stuck. And I don't want to skip and jump right over this. Like, depression's real, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we absolutely would say, if you're there and you've been there and like nothing's, you know, nothing's helping, no conversations are helping, please get clinical professional help. Because that will make all the difference in the world, as well. There are medical mental health conditions that absolutely, you know, sometimes you just can't shake it, right? So,
yeah.
Calling professionals in that situation, of course.
And working the steps, a lot of times, grief is a really big emotion that shows up, and mm-hmm. you know, being especially with this stuff, because it's like grief of relationships changed, grief of maybe lost relationships, grief of like, I mean, so many ways grief shows up, right? It can even be grief for the loss of the addiction. Like, and I'm just going to go out and say that, like, not that that really has a lot to do with the amends part. I mean, as far as like losing that addiction and having to cope, but grief is something that really shows up, and it's just really recognizing that grief mm-hmm. and working through the grief as well. Mm-hmm. And even after you've done your amends, if you've lost relationships or because you have made the amends, you know, it's just making sure that you have the tools in place to help you navigate the grief and the feelings that come with that. And that's just being real.
Right.
And, you know, when you look at this, you kind of have to look at the worst case scenario, like what is going to happen if I do this? And that's how you negate whether it's going to be cause harm or not. But it's also just recognizing, like, if this is something you need to move forward with, okay, what tools do you have in place for that as well? Not just like taking care of yourself, but also like really having a long-term plan for navigating everything that's going to come up.
Yeah, which is why it's like, okay, just focus on the next right thing.
Yeah,
because it's easy to get overwhelmed with that because our brain's going to go to worst case scenario land. Like, let it go there for a second. Let it go there for a second, but also recognize, like, I'm not there yet. I don't know. Like, we don't know what's going to happen. So, like, the next step will help us see what actually is going to happen. And we can, you know, start to get out of worst case scenario land a little bit. But it is, I think that foresight of like, well, this could happen. So, I may want to be prepared in case that happens. You know, you don't want to go camping when there's rain in the forecast without rain gear, right? So a brief scan of what might, what worst case scenario might come up and having a plan for how to address that, of course, would be important, but also don't worst case scenario it so much that you don't make the amends.
Right. Because you just never know how it's going to happen. And at the end of the day, it's like really to move forward, you've got to let go. And if you've got to do these things to let go, you know, and not every little thing you've got to make amends on, like some stuff is just like, that's just part of what happened. Like
we said we're on the yes part of the list right now. So we're that's on the yes,
like, but even, you know, you don't have to analyze, like if you gambled for 15 years, you don't have to like analyze every little thing. It's the big impactful things or even the smaller things that you still think about that mm-hmm. still impact you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So don't get overwhelmed with creating this list. Like just start on like what you're thinking about, what is most important to you, and go from there, build out.
Yeah, really. And trust that you're going to figure out what works for you, like what works for me, what works for Christina. Like we're sharing our personal experience. Like you're going to find your way. And I will say for me, just to add to kind of the, what worked for me, you know, what worked for me was absolutely like that surrender and that trust of my higher power that like, okay, like I trust if this relationship is meant to be repaired, that I'm going to have the right words and I'm going to know what to say and what not to say. And I'm going to be willing if I mess it up to fix it. You know, I think some of my early amends were like, well, I did this thing and I'm really sorry. And I won't do it again. Right. And really hollow and not at all acknowledging them and the harm. Right. And it takes practice sometimes with the amends making process to know how to do it right. But that's where, for me, that trust in my higher power, that my higher power has got a better plan than I do. And if I can just step back and let my higher power be in charge of it, you know, that my, that the actions are through me and not by me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So how do we want to wrap up this episode?
We just say goodbye.
Is there any writings in the workbook?
Let me see if there's I put the book down. Like I said, we're having such good just
did we really
dialogue.
Like cover step 9? Like I'm like
we did. Oh yep, there's a good one.
All right, let's go out with that.
All right. We'll wrap this with a quote right from the book, A Woman's Way Through the 12 Steps. In every situation, I now respond rather than react. That means taking the time to think a situation through and make a decision about the best possible response.
Very good. All right. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode, Kara.
Thanks for having me, Christina. See you at step 10.
See ya.
Out.
Peace out.